Coriolanus credited both his literal and moral survival to the Grand Mam's foresight early in the war. His parents were dead, Tigris orphaned as well, and both children were living with their grandmother. The rebels had been making slow but steady progress to the capital, although arrogance kept that reality from being widely acknowledged in the city. Food shortages required even the richest to seek out certain supplies on the black market. That was how Coriolanus found himself at the back door of a once trendy nightclub one late October afternoon, holding the handle of a small red wagon in one hand and the Grand Mam's gloved hand in the other. There was a bitter chill in the air that warned ominously of winter, and a blanket of gloomy gray clouds overhead. They had come to see Pluribus Bell, an aging man with lemon-tinted spectacles and a white powdered wig that fell to his waist. He and his partner Cyrus, a musician, owned the shuttered club and now made do by trafficking goods from its back alley. The Snows had come for a case of canned milk, the fresh stuff having disappeared weeks ago, but Pluribus said he was sold out. What had just arrived were crates of dried lima beans, stacked high on the mirrored stage behind him.
"They'll keep for years,"
Pluribus promised the Grand Mam.
"I plan on setting aside 20 or so for personal use."
Coriolanus's grandmother had laughed.
"How ghastly."
"No, my dear. Ghastly is what happens without them," Pluribus said.
He didn't elaborate, but the Grand Mam stopped laughing. She shot a look at Coriolanus, and her hand clenched his for a second. It seemed involuntary, almost a spasm. Then she looked at the crates and appeared to be figuring something in her head.
"How many can you spare?"
she asked the club owner. Coriolanus pulled one crate home in his wagon, and the other 29 arrived in the dead of night, as hoarding was technically illegal. Cyrus and a friend hauled the crates up the stairs and piled them in the middle of the lavishly furnished living room. On the top of the pile, they placed a single can of milk, compliments of Pluribus, then bid them good night. Coriolanus and Tigris helped the Grand Mam hide them in closets, in fancy wardrobes, even in the old clock.
"Who's going to eat all these?" he asked.
At this time, there was still bacon in his life, and chicken, and the occasional roast. Milk was spotty, but cheese plentiful, and some sort of dessert could be counted on at dinner, even if it was just jam bread.
"We'll eat some. Perhaps we can trade," said the Grand Mam. "They'll be our secret."
"I don't like lima beans," Coriolanus pouted. "At least I don't think I do."
"Well, we'll have cook find a good recipe," said the Grand Mam.
But the cook had been called to serve in the war, then died of the flu. The Grand Mam, it turned out, did not even know how to turn on the stove, let alone follow a recipe. It fell to 8-year-old Tigris to boil the beans to the thick stew, then the soup, then the watery broth, which was to sustain them throughout the war. Lima beans, cabbage, the ration of bread. They lived on it day in, day out, for years. Surely it had impeded his growth. Surely he would be taller, his shoulders broader, had he had more food. But his brain had developed properly. At least he hoped it had. Beans, cabbage, brown bread. Coriolanus grew to hate the stuff, but it kept them alive, without shame, and without cannibalizing the dead bodies in the streets. Coriolanus swallowed the saliva flooding his mouth as he reached for the gilt-edged plate embossed with the Academy's seal. Even in the leanest days, the capital had not lacked fancy dishware, and he had eaten many a cabbage leaf from fine china at home. He collected a linen napkin, a fork, a knife. As he raised the lid on the first sterling silver chafing dish, the steam bathed his lips. Creamed onions. He took a modest spoonful and tried not to drool. Boiled potatoes. Summer squash. Baked ham. Hot rolls and a pat of butter. On second thought, 2 pats. A full plate, but not a greedy one. Not for a teenage boy. He set his plate on the table next to Clemencia and went to retrieve his dessert from a cart, because last year they had run out and he'd missed the tapioca entirely. His heart skipped a beat when he saw the rows of apple pie wedges, each decorated with a paper flag sporting the seal of Pan Am. Pie! When had he last tasted that? He was reaching for a medium-sized piece when someone thrust a plate with an enormous slice under his nose.
Oh, take a big one. Growing boy like you can handle it.
Dean Highbottom's eyes were rheumy, but they had lost the glazed look of the morning. In fact, they were trained on Coriolanus with an unexpected sharpness. He took the plate of pie with a grin he hoped was boyishly good-natured.
Thank you, sir. I can always find room for pie.
Yes. Pleasures are never hard to accommodate, said the dean. No one would know better than I.
I suppose not, sir.
But that sounded wrong. He had meant to agree with the part about pleasures, but it sounded like a snide remark about the dean's character.
You suppose not.
Dean Highbottom's eyes narrowed as he continued to stare at Coriolanus.
So, what are your plans, Coriolanus, after the games?
I hope to go on to university, he replied.
What a strange question. Surely his academic record made that evident.
Yes, I saw your name among the prize contenders, said Dean Highbottom. But if you shouldn't be awarded one?
Coriolanus stammered. Well, then, we'd pay the tuition, of course.
Would you? Dean Highbottom laughed. Look at you, in your makeshift shirt and your too tight shoes, trying to hold it together, strutting around the Capitol when I doubt the Snows have a pot to piss in. Even with a prize, it would be a stretch, and you don't yet have one, do you? What then, I wonder, would happen to you?
What then? Coriolanus could not help but glance around to see who else had heard the terrible words, but most people were engaged in mealtime chatter.
Don't worry, nobody knows.
Well, hardly anyone.
Enjoy that pie, boy.
Dean Highbottom walked away without bothering to take a piece himself. Coriolanus wanted nothing so much as to drop his pie and run for the exit, but instead he carefully set the oversized slice back on the cart.
The nickname.
It could only be that the nickname had found its way back to Dean Highbottom, with Coriolanus given the credit. It had been stupid on his part. The dean was too powerful a person, even now, to be ridiculing in public. But was it really such a horrible thing? Every teacher had at least one nickname, many far less flattering, and it wasn't as if High as a Kite Bottom had made much effort to hide his habit. He seemed to invite derision. Could there be some other reason he hated Coriolanus so much? Whatever it was, Coriolanus needed to set it right. He could not risk losing his prize over such a thing. After university, he planned to embark on some lucrative profession. Without an education, what doors would be open to him? He tried to imagine his future in some low-level city position.
Doing what?
Managing the coal distribution to the districts? Cleaning cages of genetic freaks in the mutations lab? Collecting taxes from Sejanus Plinth in his palatial apartment on the Corso while he lived in some rat hole 50 blocks out? That's if he were lucky. Capital jobs were hard to come by, and he would become a penniless academy graduate, no more. How was he to live? Borrow? Being in debt in the capital was historically a ticket to being a peacekeeper, and that came with a 20-year commitment to who knew where. They'd ship him off to some horrid backwater district where the people were hardly better than animals. The day, which had held such promise, came crashing down around him. First the threat of losing his apartment, then the lowliest tribute assignment, who on further reflection was definitely crazy, and now the revelation that Dean Highbottom detested him enough to kill his prize chances and condemn him to a life in the districts. Everyone knew what happened if you went to the districts. You were written off, forgotten. In the eyes of the capital, you were basically dead.